Right now, we have three students. I'm going to ask each of you to please introduce yourself. Maybe you're all in 12th grade. Indicate where you go to school. And if there's anybody you want to acknowledge now who will hear what you're saying, or maybe later when this is part of a podcast, feel free to do that acknowledgement now. And we'll just go from right to left.
All right. Hi, my name is Chris. I'm a senior, 17 years old. I'm from Franklin Regional. We're also missing another member. His name's Alex, but he couldn't make it today. He's also a senior in Franklin Regional.
Hi, my name's Anika Jadia. I'm a senior at Franklin Regional High School. And yeah, I would like to give a shout out to Alex. He wasn't able to make it with us here today, but I know he would have loved to come on and talk about our project and what we're trying to accomplish.
And hi, my name is Monroe Law. I'm 18 and I go to Winchester Thurston. And I don't have any other acknowledgements. They got Alex and we are missing him today.
Now, your program is called Project Second Chance. And I'd love to know how it came together and just a little bit about it. And I'll let you folks talk about its origin, why you became passionate about this topic, and what it is that you're doing.
Yeah, so around last year, I think it's been a year since, me and Anika had a club called Collective Voices, and we came across this like awesome opportunity through the Institute for Citizens and Scholars. So what they were offering is to fund over like $5,000 for any project or any idea that was youth-centered and youth-focused. So we were really taking some time to think about what we're passionate about and what we do. And I know I'm a poet. I've appeared here before for the Youth Poet Ambassador Program. But we were trying to figure out how we can destigmatize incarceration through a new and novel way that approaches students and get them engaged in a topic that a lot of people don't know a lot about or aren't familiar with. So we came up with Project Second Chance, which is an initiative focused on destigmatizing incarceration through storytelling. And we do a lot of, and student advocacy. So we do a lot of work to be able to bring the stories of formerly incarcerated individuals to students and the community members to create a better community for them to come back to.
Anything the two of you would like to add?
Yeah, so our club, Collective Voices, was working to uplift underrepresented voices. And so that was kind of how we ended up moving into Project Second Chance, because we knew that incarcerated individuals are an underrepresented group and they do face a lot of barriers in today's society. So that was just kind of how we led into working on this project.
Monroe explained that extremely well. I don't think I have anything to add.
So how have you been capturing these stories? Or first, how long have you been at this with the project?
We've been at it for a year now, so it's really been picking up over the last couple of months. We've had a lot of difficulties, first of all, like you said, mentioning and getting into these communities and being able to find formerly incarcerated individuals. But what we did was go through our family, the people that we know, and then through that it kind of spread and grown through just word of mouth and being able to get in contact. And we've also done a lot of work to be able to get in contact with other organizations in Pittsburgh that are already doing the work and to be able to go through their network since we're young.
And is your hope to actually speak with people who are incarcerated or have been, but are you also hoping to speak with family members as well, or do you really want to get firsthand stories?
I think that right now we have gotten firsthand stories, but I think that the perspective of family members is something that's very important too. And so that's definitely something that we see in the near time future. But our interviews right now have been specifically focused on people that have been formerly incarcerated.
I'm glad you're getting those. And one reason I asked about family members is sometimes, not that their stories aren't valuable, but you kind of have to settle on those stories because the firsthand stories can be hard to get at. Tell me what that was like. Are they mostly people who have been released, or have you actually been able to talk with people through prison visits?
So since we're young, it's really hard to get clearances to actually go inside of the jail. So it's been from formerly incarcerated individuals, and we to kind of mitigate a lot of the stigma, a lot of the like hardness about being able to share your story. We do offer to make it anonymous so that we only use like pronouns or like first person perspectives in our narratives. So we do around an hour interview over like online. And then afterwards, we take time to take that interview and take it into a story and a narrative of their life. But we try to focus a lot, not just about in prison, but like who they are as a person, what are they doing now, what did they do in their childhood, to show that it's so much more than that time that you face inside of the prison.
I love what you're doing, and it's the same approach that I would probably take if I were doing it. So you spend about an hour interviewing the person. I gather it's audio and not video, am I right?
Yeah, we do have a video recording, but we do, since a lot of people choose to remain anonymous, we only use the audio. We transcribe it into a story on paper as well.
The stories must be very emotional, I would think, and it just compelling. Can you share some thoughts of individual stories and kind of what has been revealed and how that process has been?
Yeah. So we did one just last week, and it was titled Predatory Please, and the story focused around how the person that we interviewed, he lives in Wilkinsburg, and a lot of his story, he had great morals, he had a great background, his family always kept him in church. However, a lot of the community's perspective towards police officers was mitigated by that was the only role that they saw white people play in their community. And there just wasn't a lot of education in his childhood. So when he first got caught up in his first crime, which was through association, he didn't know what to do, and he just signed a plea deal because he wanted to go back home. They said he was a good kid. However, he saw that kind of spiral that you don't have the money to be able to afford the lawyers or to be able to have the resources to be able to do anything but take these plea deals. And he has been on probation since 2012. He just got off and this November. So what we really found was that this lack of awareness, a lot of what he had was accusations or something that he doesn't even claim of actually doing. But without the system being able to kind of force and coerce people into accepting these plea deals, that you're placed into a situation that is much longer and much more extensive than what actually the crime was. So it was really impactful to me just to see how the community's perspectives towards police officers or through the system really impacts how they interact or deal with these situations, and it has effects for the rest of their lives.
Each of you, please jump in as you're all talking. If you want to comment on that story or on another one you've been involved with, this is the best way to help folks listening understand. By the way, the three students here are from Project Second Chance. It's their initiative focused on destigmatizing incarceration in the Pittsburgh area. And it's really a very good thing that you're doing. Do those you interview, do you share a copy of the recording with them afterwards?
If you want to look at the full story, or if you're interested in reading the entire thing, we post every single, or we're going to in the process. We've already posted some, but there's already, Monroe wrote a very incredible narrative, and it's posted on our Substack that you can find through either looking us up or looking at our Instagram bio, just at Project Second Chance.
So Project Second Chance is how you can find this group. Now, I hate to ask this because it's not just a matter of how many, but I want to get a perspective. Have you collected a lot of stories so far?
Not a lot. I would say a lot of our work previously or throughout a lot of this year is building the networks. We have another initiative called the Community Spotlight, which I can let somebody else talk about and share. But we had to do a lot of groundwork to make sure that we were taking the appropriate measures, A, educating ourselves, educating the people that we share these stories with. So we have over 10 right now, but
that's
great.
Not
a lot. But yeah, it's a lot of work to be able to do just beyond the narrative. We do other initiatives beyond just like taking interviews. So.
Over 10, though, it is very good when you consider that you're finding a subset of people that is relatively small, and then again, a subset of people willing to do this. And I think 10's great. Now, tell me about the other project you were mentioning to try to, what was it called? Was it
Community Spotlight?
Community Spotlight.
Yeah, so a part of our mission is also to help with reentry resources. And so when we were going through these interviews, something that really stood out to me, at least, was the benefit of having a support system after, and that's a lot of that is given through reentry resources. And so our Community Spotlight initiative is just to highlight these reentry resources in the greater Pittsburgh area and kind of put them together and share their message and what they're trying to achieve and share that out so that these individuals are able to utilize it, because we know that, these resources are really, really important.
Now, there are social workers, very overworked social workers, and other services available, but I would imagine that you're providing a breath of fresh air. And I'm curious about your thoughts about that as you prepare resources and connect people.
Yeah, I think people really appreciate a student's perspective and being able to know that young people are caring outside of their own experiences, and knowing that they have a generation that's trying to work towards making a better community for them. A lot of these people are really genuine, the people that do this work. Some of them were formerly incarcerated, and they're really closely connected to the people that they work with. So we try to look at it as of a listening, and we're trying to echo the words that they're already doing and the work. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We want to make sure that the already great organizations in Pittsburgh have an opportunity to reach a wider audience.
Yeah, and Monroe kind of touched upon our having like a youth perspective. That kind of leads us into one of our other initiatives that we've been working on. It's our student educational initiative. And so what we're trying to do is specifically reduce the stigma around incarceration and incarcerated individuals with the youth. And we know that these students are still developing their own beliefs and perspectives. So if we are able to properly educate them about incarceration, we know that that can have an impact. So recently, we all had an educational session at our respective schools, which we shared a presentation about incarceration, specific facts about incarceration, facts about Allegheny County Jail, and then some of the factors that influence incarceration, like environmental factors. And then we were able to share the narratives that we had written up from the interviews. And so we were able to see how that shifted these students' perspectives on incarceration. We had them fill out a pre-survey before the educational session and then a post-survey, and the responses were just very showing to us how even a short 30-minute educational session and sharing these perspectives from someone that's incarcerated can have such a big impact on changing your perspective. And so that's another initiative that we've been working to pursue.
Have you thought about sharing your work with adults in addition to peers?
Yeah, we definitely want this to be something that is the entire community. But with schools, it's very accessible. So we're in high school, so it's easy to reach out to our principals and have like a space that all these students can come together. So that's something that we focused on right now. But I think a community event is something that we're looking forward to in the future.
Yeah, you may be able to open up some minds about why people end up in what I understand what can be just a horrible cycle, including recidivism, and people end up finding it hard to come back out. Now, it's you three and Alex with Project Second Chance. You're all seniors. What's going to happen after you graduate? Are there other students that continue to work on the program, or will you three continue?
Yeah, well, that's definitely one of the reasons we wanted to come on to here is be able to share and extend to more school districts. But we do at our respective schools have clubs that will continue it on, and me and Anika are working over this summer to hopefully turn this into a nonprofit or something that we continue into college, because I think that we found a model that works. We're finding something that actually sharing these stories does shift perspectives, and we want to be able to continue it to wherever we go off into university or wherever locations or cities that we're in.
I hope you do that. I think it's really important, and it won't surprise you, but we certainly will pledge our help on the audio recording side of things, or if any youth at our Youth Media Center want to get involved. But I'm curious, and forgive me for asking this, but you're seniors, and you've also shown great passion. So I'm curious, graduation isn't too far away. Chris, do you know what you might want to do after graduating?
You know, I'm not entirely too sure, but I've always been interested in like health sciences, and I still do want to be involved with this initiative as I continue into college. But we'd have to see how this summer goes. And obviously, I hope we're still going to keep in touch after we graduate, and we'll see.
Yeah, and I know I'm not fond of asking the question. I didn't want to answer it when people asked me in March, you know, what the fall was going to be like when I was a senior, and I wasn't really sure either, but I know people listening are curious. Anika, what do you think?
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm still waiting to hear back from a lot of schools. I think a lot of these regular decisions come out the next 2 weeks. So probably by, early April, I'll have made my decision about where to go. I have a couple of schools right now. But, yeah, I'm also, like, on the same route as Chris. I'm interested in healthcare, and I definitely see myself working on this project in college and hopefully expanding it to work on the side of healthcare a little bit more. I know we were able to talk to someone during one of our interviews. He talked about how healthcare within the prison system needs a lot of reform. And so that's something I definitely see myself pursuing because I am interested in healthcare. And so in college, I think that would be another way to expand this project and its impact even farther.
I'll bet there are programs, and I think you know about them based on the research you've done, that are working to improve healthcare in that environment. Monroe, what about you?
Yeah, so I'm really excited for the next upcoming year. This is definitely completely aligned for what I want to do. I'm really passionate about prison reform and focusing more on rehabilitation instead of just putting people behind bars. So I plan on studying political science and economics. I'm not exactly sure where I'm going right now, but I've been able to get into Georgetown and Columbia, so, and a couple other schools. The college application journey was a lot, so I applied to like 15-something schools. But wow. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where I'll be at next year, but I do know completely that this is something that I'm going to continue, whether it's through this club or being able to just do my studies. So.
Well, it's exciting. I think you do all have the potential to keep building on what you've done to sustain it and to allow it to ripple out. You are very special, but there are other people like you in schools throughout all of southwestern Pennsylvania, but also throughout the whole country, and you have a lot to be able to offer. Is there, based on the 10 interviews you've done, if you were to give a message on behalf of the people you've interviewed, is there an underlying message that seems to come through almost across all of them?
That's a great question. I think that a lot of these, if I had to give like a message, it's just that people are more than what they were in prison for, and that giving them a chance to be able to go into your community, to be able to go back into the workforce. I think that also, like you said, recidivism is a very huge problem. A lot of people do get trapped in the cycles of like their family members or get going back. But there is also a large portion of people who are formerly incarcerated that want to work, that want to be able to build and be accepted in our community. So give them a second chance, and I think that we can have a better community for it.
And that's like the entire goal of I guess what we should call it, the Narratives Fit Into Our Empathy First campaign. And like the entire goal is just to stop putting incarceration and stop seeing it as just a label to put on someone. But you have to understand, and a lot of people don't, you have to see the circumstances and the humanity behind why this happens to so many people. And that's what our goal is.
Yeah, I think that Monroe and Chris did a really good job. I would say that, you know, we're all more alike than you think we are. And so even if someone has had this experience of being incarcerated, I saw throughout these interviews that there are so many values that we all have in similarity and that they've grown up with. And so just remember that we're all the same and we're all people. And so, yeah, we all deserve a second chance.
And one other question. What's been as long as I'm not violating any confidentiality, the age range of who you've interviewed? And have you talked to men and women?
Yeah, so we have had, it's more men than women, but the age range has typically been like 30s and mid-30s, 40s. So on the older side of the spectrum, I think that we just found that age group has wanted to share the most and is most confident and comfortable. And I think that has to do with a lot of the stigma around sharing your story. And a lot of the people that are younger have a lot of more community, or like friends and family members that are their age and just aren't as more comfortable sharing. But
well, I admire each of you for the work that you're doing, Chris, Anika, and Monroe. And Project Second Chance on Instagram, I believe it's Project_Seconds_Chance. You can find them there or just Google Project Second Chance. If you're a teacher and think this would work well in your school, get in touch with them. If you're a teen,
yes,
same thing. And as I said to the three of you, we'd love to help you in any way we possibly can. And you're all graduating this year, is that correct?
Yeah.
So happy graduation in advance. I wanted to be sure I got that right. Again, it's Project_Second_Chance at Instagram. Anybody else want to say anything that I may have missed?
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on. And yeah, if anybody is interested in getting involved in our mission, or if there are any organizations that work with reentry, we would love to connect with you and amplify your voice. So please reach out to us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You.